Chapter 2. Yeah, we got one too, Allison says. Styles can hear her shuffling through papers on the other end of the telephone. Weird. This is only... Styles, this is coming Saturday. That's only a week away. I know, Styles says. He's not exactly experienced with weddings. He went to a cousin's once when he was a lot younger, before his mother died. But that was it. But he does know from his father's quiet talks with Melissa about whether or not they should tie the knot. They take time to prepare. It has to be unusual for invitations to go out a week ahead of time. If that were the only unusual thing about this wedding, he might be inclined to let it go. But it's not even close. He's emailed back and forth with Lucy Wednesday Adams Arnell for years, ever since they had met. Much of their correspondence was professional, asking if the other was familiar with certain types of monsters or had any information on how to deal with them. But he was always friendly, keeping her up to date on his exciting life, and she occasionally reciprocated. The last he had heard, which was 6 months prior at least, she'd been dating a werewolf in her local pack named Calvin. Putting aside how that could have ended badly, given the myriad number of possible problems, Styles can't think of anyone less likely to voluntarily marry Martin Drake's oldest son and, since Drake didn't abide by the primarily matriarchal hunter rules, heir. What do you think we should do? She asks. The invitation is addressed to Mom and Dad, and then there's another for me with an option of a plus one. No RSVP needed. Yeah, they couldn't insist on RSVPs if they're only going to give people a week of notice, Styles says, but then adds, well, we've been off at school. Did your parents say when the invitations arrived? Just yesterday, Mom said, Allison tells him. Okay, so it's not just that they've been sitting around waiting for us to see them, Styles says. I get why they would have invited me, Allison says. Intermarriage between two hunter families is a big deal. But why invite you? No offense or anything. Maybe they just invited a ton of people, figuring with the short notice only about half of them would be able to come? Styles says. But he's already shaking his head. Something about this is weird. His spidey senses are tingling. Before Allison has a chance to respond, he says, well, we won't find out anything by just sitting around talking about it. Do you know if any of the hunters you talk with might know? I'll email Sam. I think he and Wednesday kept in touch after the last conclave, Allison says, but she sounds dubious about it. No one really talks to the Drake family. From the way they're springing this on everybody, it seems obvious to me that he didn't want anyone to have much of a chance to talk about it. Yeah, Styles agrees. If hunter weddings are a big deal, he would think they would want months to prepare. They would want to make sure everyone from the big families had a chance to clear their schedules and find a way to be there. So either the Drake family doesn't want a lot of people there, or they're banking on the fact that everyone is going to find a way anyway. Pack meeting tonight, 7 p.m. at the Den. We'll eat at 6. Start the phone tree. Roger that, Allison says, and hangs up. Styles turns to find his father has been listening in and looking at the invitation. You seem like you are bursting with eagerness to tell me what you're thinking. Tom gives him a somewhat weary look, but then says, well, I know that you know this girl a lot better than I do. I can't argue with your assessment, but I also know you tend to see shadow and conspiracy even when there isn't any there. Not that I'm blaming you. He adds, seeing Styles open his mouth to protest. God knows you've had more than your fair share. But I think there's a strong possibility that there's a simple explanation for this. Shotgun wedding? Styles says, quirking his eyebrows. Do they still have those? Tom asks, with a note of humor. I didn't think pregnancy out of wedlock was such a big deal anymore. Well, this is Kentucky, Styles says. That's another thing he's wondering about. The wedding is in Wednesday's backyard, not Drake's. Does that mean anything? Or is he overthinking like his father suggested? Tom gives a snort of laughter. I meant, maybe two kids met and fell in love and decided to throw together a quickie wedding. But because intermarrying two hunter families isn't that simple, Drake's father made him send out invites. From what you've told me about him, he'd want a chance to brag that he's adding more territory. By hunter rules, he's not, Stiles says. The territory would stay in the Arnell family. Matriarchal society, remember? True, but Drake doesn't seem to play by those rules, so who knows what he's thinking about it? Tom shrugs. And there's always the possibility that they just didn't want to wait to get married.
And that doesn't seem sinister to you?
Stiles asks. It could, Tom says, but it might not. He gives a fond smile and says, I remember when your mother had to talk me out of a 15-minute courthouse wedding because I just didn't want to wait any longer to be her husband. She said both our sets of parents would have killed us, and she was probably right. But if I could have married her the day I proposed, I would have.
Okay, that's really sweet. And also, I'm going to cry. But you didn't meet Wednesday,
Stiles says. She isn't like that. Even the hardest women can fall in love, Tom says. Look at Victoria Argent. He sees Stiles' face and says, I'm just saying, go into this with an open mind, okay? That's all.
Okay,
Stiles says, feeling grumpy. He feels somewhat validated by the reaction of the pack later. Scott, Erica, and Derek all gape at him when he shows them the invitation.
Wednesday's getting married? Scott blurts out. Why?
Erica asks, and everyone gives a little snort of laughter. Because Erica's complete lack of interest in anything romantic and or long-term is well known in the pack.
It's this thing people do when they fall in love, or so I'm told,
Boyd tells her, and she blows him a kiss. Martin Drake? Danny is looking over the invitation. All of them know the Hunter basics, but since Danny helped write and helps maintain the Hunter database, he knows the names better than most of the others.
Isn't that guy kind of old for her?
Martin Drake Sr. would be, Stiles says, but his only son and namesake is only a year or two older than us, so he'd be, I think, 22 to Wednesday's 19. Not unreasonable.
Isn't Drake the guy making moves on everybody's territory?
Isaac asks.
Yes, he is, Stiles says. Which does make me incredibly nervous about this. I mean, he already stole the two territories he has. Now, given Hunter's society, Wednesday should keep control of her territory, and Martin Jr. would become an Arnell, rather than the other way around. But we don't know if that's something he plans to honor.
Okay, but is that really our business? Lydia asks. I get that Drake might not be the world's most stand-up guy. But this is Hunter stuff.
No, it isn't, Stiles says. It isn't even remotely our business, which is precisely why I'm bothered by this invitation.
There's a moment of silence and a round of nods.
So, Stiles says, who's up for a trip to Kentucky?
Depends on how we're getting there,
Boyd says.
Stiles grimaces. We'll fly, but we'll do it commercial. I just so happen to have obtained fake identities for all of you, so we can do it under the radar. I don't want anyone knowing what flight we're on.
More paranoia, he thinks. It's basically his way of life now.
And I know that we're not fans of splitting up, but I don't want to leave the territory unguarded, so...
Well, I'm going, Allison says. I was invited in everything.
If Allison's going, I'm going. Scott says,
and Stiles thinks about making a pithy comment, but decides against it. He'll be glad to have both of them along, no matter how sickeningly sweet their romance is, even after years together.
I can go, Erica says. I liked Wednesday. She was my kind of bitch. If she's in any trouble, I'll beat the shit out of it.
Pass, Danny says. I've got a big computer project due on the Tuesday after the wedding. And don't even say we'll be back by then, because you know if we plan to be back by then for school reasons, then we'll wind up, I don't know, stranded in a desert somewhere.
Fair, Stiles says. You're my ride to school, Max says. So if you're going, I might as well go, since the alternative is to take the bus, and yuck.
On the same note, if Danny's staying, I'll stay, Boyd says. Isaac?
Yeah, I'll hang out here and take care of you two,
Isaac says, and Boyd rolls his eyes.
I think I'll sit this one out too, Lydia says. I'm really loving my classes this semester, but they're a lot of work.
That's 6 going and 4 staying, which isn't exactly the best of divisions, but Stiles decides to roll with it. He'd rather have the backup with him, where there's likely to be trouble, and he doubts that anyone's actually using this as a diversion to make a move on his territory. Besides, he likes to let the pack have as much autonomy as possible. If this is how they want to split, he'll go with it.
Okay, he says. I'll make the flight arrangements. Go talk to your parents, all that jazz.
The next day, everything's being arranged, and he's at the Fresno airport sitting with his head between his knees, trying not to think about how he doesn't need to add a fear of flying to his long list of phobias. Derek sits with him, awkwardly, patting his back occasionally as he eases himself out of the panic attack. It's difficult, because Derek has hated flying since long before Sally Stoddard crashed their plane.
Do you want to call Gwen? Derek asks.
No, I'm okay,
Stiles says, repeating the calming mantras to himself to keep focused.
Just need a few minutes.
He reminds himself that nobody has any idea what plane he's taking, that the security at a major airport is a lot better than at the private hangar that Franklin's plane had left out of. They'll be fine. Statistics about getting hit by meteors leap to mind. He wonders if those statistics actually help anybody.
Here, we got you something, Scott says, and shoves some coffee monstrosity in his hands. He laughs and starts blinking. They have about half an hour before they need to be through security, and he gets most of it down in that time.
Allison is the only one with a checked bag, because she needs one to bring her weaponry with her. Stiles stowed his .38 in that bag, so he doesn't have to worry about that. He only has his backpack, which has a few changes of clothes and his toiletries, and his laptop bag. The others are packed about the same way. Derek has a bag that the others call his purse, but he grumpily insists they call a satchel.
Purses are for money. This is for art supplies, he says, when someone made a joke about him not wanting to look like a woman. It has nothing to do with gender.
And everything to do with pedantry,
Stiles concluded, chortling, and Stiles smacked him upside the head. The flight isn't a short one, and Stiles is restless, but the others help keep him occupied. They touch down around 4 p.m. local time, which is still 2 p.m. California time, and they rent a car at the airport. Then it's about an hour drive to Bowling Green, the small town that Wednesday is from, and where the wedding is going to be held. They've made reservations at a hotel. Stiles would have been happy at a Motel 6, but any time he suggests something like that, Derek wrinkles his nose. It's not that Derek's a snob, it's just that he's always had money, and so there are some things that he doesn't understand why people would go the cheap route on. Occasionally, Stiles argues, but not when it comes to hotels. He has absolutely zero problem staying at a Marriott or a Hilton. Well, that's not true. He has one problem. It's funny, but he finds that cheap hotels usually provide free Wi-Fi, whereas expensive hotels have the nerve to charge you for it. He even once stayed in a Marriott that blocked his hotspot, which pissed him off so royally that he wrote a scathing review on Yelp. This hotel doesn't have the same problem, however, so he's easily able to look up the name Arnell in the metaphorical white pages. There's only one listing,
But to be sure, he dials it on his cell phone. A child picks up, and he asks, "Is Lucy there?" "She's not here right now," the voice says. "You want to talk to my grandma?" "No, thanks. I'll just try back later," Stiles says, and hangs up. "Okay, let's get moving," he says, and plugs the address into his phone's GPS. It's not far. The problem with six people being on this trip is that they don't easily fit in one car. So Stiles had requested that the rental agency give him an SUV. He feels like a soccer mom, but he supposes there are worse things to be mistaken for. He parks a few doors down the street from the Arnell house. "Wait, if she's not here, why did we come here?" Scott says. "Well, I'm hoping they'll know where she is," Stiles says. "But if they don't, we can wait for her here." "Oh, right," Scott says. "I don't want to scare the living daylights out of her family, though," Stiles adds. "And let's not forget that this is a family that hunts werewolves, and we don't know what degree any of her younger siblings are trained for. So, Allison, you're with me. Derek, cover our backs. The rest of you stay in the car unless I call for you."
"Aye, aye, sir,"
Erica says, although she sounds somewhat disgruntled. As they approach the door, Stiles says, "Allison, I'm gonna let you do the talking. I don't want them getting weird about me being here. I don't know if anyone even realizes that I was invited. So just introduce yourself, say you thought you would stop by and see Wednesday, Lucy, before the wedding, and maybe they'll say something useful." Allison nods and rings the bell. It's a nice little house, the kind that's clearly old but well-maintained, with a lot of love and elbow grease rather than money. The front walk is cracked in two places, but filled in with asphalt. And the lawn is more crabgrass and wildflowers than any sort of typical grass. There's a huge tree with an old-fashioned swing suspended from it, and a tricycle in the driveway. Wednesday had never mentioned having any siblings at the conclave. But then again, Stiles thinks, he had never asked. She wasn't exactly the sort of person who shared a lot. He knew her parents had died 4 years before the conclave, so the youngest sibling she could possibly have would now be about 6 years old. The thought of her having to cope with her parents' death, her sudden ascension to head of their family, along with watching a passel of younger siblings, hits him hard. He's an only child himself, but there are several pack members with siblings, and he knows how fiercely protective of them they are, even when they aren't getting along. The door is opened by a girl of about 13, with strawberry blonde hair and a cute upturned nose. She doesn't open it all the way, though, leaving the chain on. "Hello? Hey, my name is Allison Argent," she says warmly, with that Disney princess smile that puts everyone at ease. "I'm in town for the wedding, and I thought I would stop by to see Lucy. Is she home?"
"No,"
the girl says, and frowns. "She doesn't live here anymore."
"Oh," Allison says. "Can you tell me where she lives?"
"I'd better ask my gram," the girl says, and gives them an expectant look. Stiles sees that she's waiting to see if they try to talk her out of it or not, if they try to persuade her. She's testing them, and he approves. Allison evidently does as well, because she smiles and says, "Okay, we can wait." The girl nods and shuts the door. There are several long minutes of silence, but then she comes back.
"Graham wants to see your invitation."
"Sure," Allison says, taking it out of her purse and handing it over. The girl turns around and trots off, but this time she leaves the door open a crack. Stiles suspects that she wants to know if they're going to try to come in without permission or not. He has no doubt that someone with some sort of weapon will be waiting if they do. Another minute passes, and then she comes back, still holding their invitation. She hands it back to Allison, and Stiles sees that there's an address written on the back now.
"Here,"
she says, handing it back to them.
"Thanks,
Stiles lets his voice trail off.
"Izzy,"
the girl says.
"Thanks, Izzy. If we see your sister, should we tell her anything from you?"
he asks,
and sees her give them the side eye, judging their intentions. He feels like she's pondering a lot of different options, but maybe that's just him seeing shadows and conspiracy again. "Ask her where we should send the presents," Izzy says, and shuts the door in their face. "That's interesting," Stiles says as they walk back to the car. "Which part?" Derek asks, catching up with them as they do. "If they don't know where to send the presents, it's because they weren't invited to the wedding," Stiles says. And Izzy didn't want to admit that, not right off, at least not without checking with her grandmother. So she said that instead. But that's interesting, isn't it? Why wouldn't the family be invited to the wedding? Unless they don't approve of it. Did they even know about it? Erica asks. Yeah, they knew, Stiles says. She wasn't surprised at all when we mentioned it. Didn't think it was weird that that's why we were in town. But I don't think she likes it very much.
So where are we going? Scott asks from behind the wheel.
Stiles glances down at the address. It's not even in Bowling Green, but a nearby town. He puts the address in his phone and they start down the road.
The shift of the landscape as they travel is interesting. Wednesday's neighborhood is full of small houses, close together, with obvious evidence of families and children. It's not a poor neighborhood, but probably lower middle class. Now they're headed into the upper crust areas not far away, with larger lots, manicured lawns, fancy gates. Fortunately, the gate at the house they're directed to is open, and Scott pulls inside. He hums for a minute and then sings, "I ain't saying she's a gold digger."
"Shut up," Allison says, laughing. Stiles has to agree to a certain extent. He thinks back to what Chris had said about hunters and their backers. Back at the conclave, Jonas Aronson had made a comment about the Arnell family being broke. He was sure that Wednesday, young and inexperienced as she was, had struggled to keep her finances afloat. Was this why she had agreed to marry Martin Drake Jr.? Was it all about the money? He could hardly blame her if it was. He had watched Scott's mother try to scrape up enough to keep their heads above water after Raphael had left them. He'd seen Boyd's family work on their shoestring budget. Years of living off Derek's immense wealth hadn't changed the fact that he had seen what that was like. If money was what Wednesday needed, this would certainly be one way to get it. And for that matter, he could see Wednesday doing that. One of the reasons he had liked her so much was because she was profoundly practical. She would pass by love and marry for money, if money was what she needed. It's all speculation, however, so he tells the others the same thing he had at the Arnell house, and gets out of the car. This time, Derek decides to go in with them. He doesn't like Stiles being on enemy territory alone. Wednesday was a friend. Her house was safe. Drake is an unknown entity, and this house most likely belongs to him. Stiles has no interest in getting between Derek and his protective instincts, so he nods and agrees. It isn't quite nice enough for a butler, so they wind up standing on the doorstep for several long minutes. Then the door swings open, and a young woman is standing there. She looks a little like Izzy, the girl at the Arnell house, with the same long, strawberry blonde hair. Hers is done in two braids that neatly frame her freckled face. The freckles go down over her shoulders, for that matter, easily visible because she's wearing a yellow and white sundress, which accentuates the slight curve of her belly.
"Wednesday?"
Derek asks, his tone a little doubtful. And Stiles' gaze snaps up to the girl's face. She's wearing pink lipstick and has pretty blue eyes and... "Wednesday?" he echoes. And the eye roll is what finally makes him sure. "Jesus, I didn't even recognize you without your goth getup." He glances over at Allison and sees that her jaw is slightly ajar, so clearly she didn't either. Derek probably was going off scent more than sight, as he's wont to do. Stiles' gaze goes down to her stomach again. And now he knows that his mouth is probably hanging open, too. "What are you doing here?" Wednesday asks, and her tone is anything but friendly. So at least that hasn't changed. I got your invitation, Styles says. To the wedding? Wednesday frowns. I didn't invite you. What are you talking about? Well, somebody did, Styles says. The wedding is on Saturday, Wednesday says. Come back then. She starts to close the door, but Styles grabs it. He's completely lost his ability to be smooth and tactful. Wednesday, what the hell? Why are you suddenly getting married and only giving people a week's notice? Why did you leave home? Why are you wearing a yellow sundress? You're the last person on earth I would have expected to see in a yellow dress. I can wear whatever I want, Wednesday says. I don't have to justify my fashion choices to you. Okay, that's true, Styles says. But holy shit, are you pregnant? I guessed at this being a shotgun wedding, but holy shit! Styles, Derek says with a wince. Yeah, sorry, but I just... Yes, I'm pregnant, Wednesday says. Anything else? No? Then I'll see you Wednesday at the... Lucy! A cheerful voice booms out behind her, and she glances over her shoulder. Derek's nostrils flare slightly, but Styles decides against saying anything about that until after they're out of here. The man who comes to the door is wearing a wide smile, a polo shirt, and slacks. He's got a watch that Styles thinks probably cost more than everything he's currently wearing or has ever worn. He also has a golfer's tan and short black hair with just a splash of gray at the temples. Who are your friends, sugar? Wednesday's expression doesn't change, but she turns slightly to the side so she's not in the doorway anymore. Martin, she says, and Styles assumes, or at least hopes, that this is Martin Sr. This is Stanley Winchester. I met him at the conclave a couple years ago. This ruse shouldn't work, Styles thinks. It wouldn't work with virtually any hunter. But Drake wasn't at the conclave. They had excluded him because nobody likes him. He can see how that would burn, and he wonders if Drake is holding a grudge. But for the moment, it's an advantage. Nice to meet you, sir, Styles says, extending his hand. Drake has a firm handshake and a smile that crinkles the corner of his eyes. The lines don't quite go away when the expression relaxes, so he clearly smiles a lot. This is my boyfriend, Jack, he adds, fumbling for a convenient excuse. And, this is Allison. Argent, she says, shaking his hand with a smile of her own. Oh, I've heard all about you, he says. Please, won't you come in and have some lemonade? We can't, Derek interjects smoothly. And Styles isn't thrilled about it, but he knows that Derek picked up on something he hasn't, so he doesn't argue. We actually just got in, and we need to go check into our hotel. We just thought we would stop by and say hello first. You are staying at the Biltmore, right? Drake asks. I've booked out rooms for the wedding. Just tell them you're here for the Drake Arnell wedding. They'll give you a great deal. We'll definitely look into that, Styles says. Right now we're at the Hyatt, but... Yeah, that place is okay, but the Biltmore is much classier, Drake says. Just tell them Martin sent you and they'll get you taken care of. He shakes their hands again. Hey, it was great to meet you kids. Make sure you stop by again before the wedding, okay? We've got a lot to do, but spending time with our friends and family is the most important thing. Lucy, the cakes are ready. You're going to come help with the taste testing, right? See you kids later. A bare moment later, the door is shut. Styles says, he strikes me as more of an auctioneer than a used car salesman. And Allison gives a snort. I don't like guys like that, Derek says. They talk a lot to distract you. Yeah, I know the type, Styles says. I am the type. At this, Derek laughs quietly, and then reaches out to rub a hand over Styles' hair. They get back into the SUV and start driving. "Why do you think we needed to cut and run?" Styles asks Derek. "When he showed up, Wednesday was afraid. She hit it really well, but I could smell it. The sudden spike of adrenaline. And then she lied about who you were." Derek shakes his head. "When he asked us to come in, that fear spiked again. And when I said we couldn't, she relaxed. Your instincts were right, Styles. Something is wrong here. Really wrong."
"Well," Allison says, "we're just going to have to find out what..."